Hi, today is February 15th, 2014, and this is Mobile Views Podcast number 75. This is Todd Ogasawara with my good friend John Westfall. And today we're going to talk about Office apps for mobile platforms, and mostly because we read two contradicting articles.
Yes. Competing, conflicting. Confusing.
Yeah.
Conflated.
A lot of words.
A bunch of C adjectives exactly. That you could use for this.
One was written by my former editor, actually, Preston Gralla, on Computer World that says, Microsoft Office is not coming to the iPad. And the other one was written by Mary Jo Foley on ZDNet, which says, Office is coming to the iPad. So, like John said, we're really confused and conflicted.
Yeah, and we're more. Yeah, I think it's the conflicting that I'm being a fan of, because Office on the mobile platform sounds great in theory, but in execution, one does not know exactly what Microsoft will do. I think of a couple of years ago when they brought SkyDrive syncing to the Mac platform, and they made a few really amateur oversights. And a bunch of Mac people got really upset with them, saying, why didn't you build the app to do this or that? And it was very clear that they didn't quite get that platform, and it was another desktop platform. So with a tablet platform, I have no idea what they're thinking Office should or could look like.
Yeah, and you know, and Office on mobile platforms has been a real problem for Microsoft for many years. I think those of us who remember the original Microsoft handheld PC platform, from way back in 1996, 1997, is the handheld PC, which was a little touchscreen device with a QWERTY keyboard. Mm-hmm. We would call it a phablet today if it had a phone on it. Actually came with Microsoft Office. It came with Word, Excel. Did it come with PowerPoint? I can't remember, but definitely Access, and Access was terrible on it. In fact, when our mutual friend Frank McPherson was writing a book, I think it was a Pocket PC book. I know he had a real problem trying to figure out something useful to write about Access for the Pocket PC and handheld PC.
That's I sort of similar had the problem when I wrote Windows Phone 7 Made Simple. There are some things that you can't make much more simple than they are, and so you're trying to, especially when I wrote it was when Microsoft was rolling out Office Online and SkyDrive syncing to the phone platform, and so there were just a lot of missing pieces.
Yeah, so we still kind of are. We should say there is an Office for mobile platforms, but it's all mostly Microsoft platforms. Windows Phone mm-hmm. comes with Office, I assume. Windows Phone 8. I haven't seen Windows Phone 8, but Windows Phone 7 came with a little tiny kind of crippled version of Office, as were the original handheld PC versions. They're very much subsets. They're missing lots and lots of features. They were
you know, named Pocket Word,
exactly.
Pocket Excel.
Exactly.
There was Pocket Outlook, but you never knew it because it was just what they referred to all the collective PIM elements in the device to be.
Exactly.
So you'd be looking at your email and they'd say, well, this was technically Pocket Outlook.
Right.
And you had no icon.
And they weren't unified like we're in Outlook. So like you said, they're separate items, separate mm-hmm. applications. And although I don't think a lot of people realize it, if you have an Office 365 subscription, there actually is a Microsoft Office Mobile for the iPhone, but iPhone only will not install or run an iPad.
Yeah, that's something I was not aware of, probably because I don't really use an Office 365 account.
Yeah, neither do I, but I got one for my daughter when she went off to college. And I should say, by the way, that if you have a child that's going off to college, one of the best deals in the world is Office 365 University Edition, which costs $79 for all 4 years. Let me repeat that, $79 4 years, not per year, but all 4 years. It's a good deal.
Or one other thing to also check into is if your son or daughter is going somewhere that has not just educational pricing, but perhaps a site licensing deal. I know a few of the universities that I've worked with have not just for faculty and staff, but also for students, the ability to download and install Office on at least one personal machine. So that's something that you want to check with your son or daughter's prospective college's IT department.
Very good
point. To see
if
there's anything You can usually find it right on their website because they'll have something like Microsoft Software for Students, and it'll either say you have to go buy it at the bookstore, or it might say there's a site license, you can download it, etc.
Yeah, it's a very good point. But anyway, getting back to Office for the mobile platform, so Preston said Office is not coming to the iPad based on some statements, I think one of Microsoft's CFOs or one of those kind of people made in a conference call about looking carefully at deploying Office, while Mary Jo Foley, who has pretty good insight and some very good connections in Microsoft, is saying it's not just coming, it's coming this year. And the big deal, of course, is that except for Office for the Mac, Office doesn't run on other, or I shouldn't say other, doesn't run a non-Microsoft platform, with exception of Office for the Mac and that Office for iOS, if you have Office 365 subscription. And it's been a real bone of contention for a lot of people, especially on the iPad for, since 2010 when the iPad came out. So it's been 4 years now. I should also note a lot of people wanted to see Office for Linux many years ago. But as Linux faded from view, unless you consider Android Linux, then it became less and less important. But it is a big deal to a lot of people to have Microsoft Office on the iPad, even though there are alternatives. And I thought maybe you and I could talk about what it means to have Office on the iPad, a real Office, not the subsets we've been seeing for nearly 20 years now, and also some of the alternatives for them, because I know I've tried a few.
Yeah, and I think in my opinion, the best way to get Office on your iOS device right now is there's a company named CloudOn. And CloudOn, if you buy their subscription or even for free, you can access a remote desktop version of Office. So you can open Office files. It uses your Google storage or your Dropbox storage. You can connect a couple of different backends to it. But the problem with CloudOn is that you're looking at actual Office. So it can be very small. It can be hard to point to exactly what you want. Doing it on an iPhone is very frustrating. An iPad is slightly less frustrating. So I keep a subscription to CloudOn for something like $25 a year, just in those rare cases where I actually need to get full Office and open an Office document without wanting to start up my computer, or maybe my computer's not with me. But it's not, in my opinion, an everyday solution. But it is getting Office on your iOS or Android device.
Right. And now, how do you buy it? So the app itself is free, and you have to purchase, as you said, an annual or monthly plan to get access to Office. Is that right?
Yes. The free version comes with limited abilities to get into the Office platform. Mm-hmm. So you're able to, I believe, view files in a few different ways, but you're not able to integrate absolutely everything with it. So it's one of those things that when you get the what they call CloudOn Pro, then you can do things like use track changes or review track changes, insert tables, filter data in Excel, presentation mode in PowerPoint. So some of those things that if you're a heavy Office user, you will definitely want. And right, promotional pricing is $3.99 a month. After that, it goes up to $7.99 a month.
Okay. Okay, and that you get actual real Office in kind of a remote, I was going to say VM, but that's not right, but kind of a remote connectivity kind of mode. But it doesn't have to be on your PC. Basically, they provide the service. They provide, I assume, some kind of Office license, so you're legitimately using Office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they introduced, there was, for the first couple months, they were kind of running under their interpretation of an Office license, and then Microsoft stepped in, and after some pushing and pulling, they created a license that was happy with Microsoft and happy for them. So it's legit, and it's something you can use if you really don't find an alternative that suits your fancy. But that being said, there are many alternatives.
Yeah, so probably the best known of the alternatives is the iWork suite, which is not really a suite in purchase for iOS, for the iPad and iPhone, because you have to buy Pages, Numbers, and Keynote separately. I think they're about $10 each. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. They used to be $10 each. They're now free.
Yes. And if you were someone like me who had iWorks 09 installed on your Mac, And of course, they became free if you bought a new iOS device. I had older iOS devices, but because I had iWorks 09 installed, Apple didn't want to leave anyone out, and so they decided to be very inclusive, and it automatically bumped my licenses up for iWorks on Mac, and I had already bought the iWorks suite on iOS, so I didn't have to pay the additional, I think it was $19 each on macOS, because I had that copy of iWorks 09. So if you have some time and you have kind of a predisposition for this sort of thing, you could go on eBay and buy a copy of iWorks 09, and then presumably the same thing might happen for you. I don't know for sure, but Apple decided to not split hairs, as it were, with that sort of requirement.
With the legacy crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, of course, people who bought new iOS devices last year after the refresh could opt to download the three iWorks components for free. So they're all set. They're not 100% compatible with Word and Excel and PowerPoint in terms of all the little features, like perhaps, and I don't know for sure, but let's say endnotes and footnotes and indexing and table of contents, those sort of things. They might be. I haven't really tested against them, but they weren't the last time I looked, which is about 2 years ago. But they're certainly capable little programs. They're not, you know, they didn't seem to be as fully featured. And in fact, I understand that with the latest version, they actually lost some features, or at least the OS X version lost some features because they wanted parity between iOS and OS X version.
Yes, and the nice thing, so I've used iWorks quite a bit. Pages is the one app that I haven't used as much because it doesn't still support some of those features you're talking about. And most of my colleagues, when we work on manuscripts together, we like to use Word for track changes and all of those things.
Right.
However, I've used Pages and I've used Numbers and Keynote quite a bit. This latest version did remove some of those features that I enjoyed. However, I've kind of seen the light proverbially in why it's good to have uniform features across both platforms, because now I can edit and I know I'm not doing something that I can only edit on the Mac OS X version. And Numbers is a very capable spreadsheet program. I've done everything I've done in Numbers. I could also have done in Excel, but at least Numbers plays a little nicer and it's more finger touch sensitive and friendly than any version of Excel or Excel Mobile I've ever found.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, having tried a couple of versions. Hey, you know, I've played with Pages, the word processor, a lot. Numbers, not so much. Keynote, not so much. But for Numbers, since you may know about this, although I guess you haven't played much either, do you know if it supports pivot tables like Excel does? I live and die in pivot tables.
And pivot tables are one thing I have never lived or died by. In fact, I still have trouble in Excel trying to create anything useful with a pivot table. Numbers does not, I believe, have much in way of pivot table functionality or real complex charting functionality. But there are some things that I think Numbers has over Excel. For example, one of the things that I use Numbers for is taking attendance in my classes. And I've got a nice little spreadsheet that when I tap next to the student's name, it gives me a little pop-up and lets me pick either, you know, present, absent, whatever. As soon as I pick that, it color codes the cell to show what it is so I can kind of look at any day and see if I've got a lot of absences or just a few. And those are things that I worry Microsoft would not add in, because that's something that's really important when you have a touch device. Mm-hmm. And something that you've basically created your own little app that's custom exactly the way you'd like it. Apple seems to get that. They have different cell formats, things like drop-downs, rating lists, sliders, that I don't know if we'd see in an Excel version.
Yeah, and I have to say, you know, I've got Office 2013, not the Office 365 version, I should say, the standalone version, that came with my hybrid tablets, my Asus T100 and my Dell Venue Pro 8. And even though Microsoft says that the desktop version of these is supposed to be more touch-friendly, in fact, I think there's an option that's supposed to do that. It really isn't. You really need a mouse or stylus or you know, touchpad or something to aim, because those menus and things are still really tiny. Office is not available for Metro on Microsoft's mm-hmm. own Windows 8 platform. So it's they are really far behind and falling further behind. Windows 8 was introduced nearly 2 years ago now, a year and a half ago in mm-hmm. late 2012. So Microsoft itself has not been able to produce Office for Metro. But moving on, for iWorks for iOS, which is touch-friendly, there's also something from Google, which bought QuickOffice a while ago, a couple mm-hmm. years ago. QuickOffice used to be a four-fee paid product. Google released a free version of QuickOffice for Android. It's quite capable. It's got some issues, but it's quite capable. It is free. An update for the Android version just came out yesterday that's supposed to improve keyboard support. I haven't tested that yet. I assume they mean a Bluetooth keyboard. Mm. It's also available for free for iOS. Have you played with this one?
I haven't played with it for a while. I use Google Docs quite a bit for documents that I want to look nice and also be easily shareable. So, for example, all of my course syllabi are on Google Docs because I can just give links to students and they can download the PDF or they can view it in a whatever browser they'd like. I haven't had much of a chance to play with QuickOffice. I played with it, like I said, about a year ago and found it very capable of at least viewing and small edits. But, again, it wasn't something that I would like to live in to composed documents. It would only be review documents.
Yeah. I should note that QuickOffice is not only free and available for Android and iOS, but it also is very much tied to Google Drive.
That would be an interesting choice.
Yeah, well, you know, and actually, it's an interesting problem that it comes up for some people, I think, is that when QuickOffice was a standalone, non-Google product, it talked to everything. It could work with Dropbox, SkyDrive, and Google Drive. But I think now, by default, it points to Google Drive, which makes sense. And I don't even know if you can access Dropbox and SkyDrive anymore. So it's very Google-centric now. I like it a lot. I've used it to actually compose things, like I've written articles using it. And it's really important if you're an Android user because Google Docs in the web or the Google Docs application for iOS and for Android is not very good from an Office Suite point of view. It's supported, but it's not very good. So if you're going to be mm-hmm. on a mobile platform, you want to use Google Drive a lot for your documentation. I would go get the free QuickOffice. The thing I used to use before QuickOffice became available was Documents2Go, which has been around a long time. I think it was.
Oh yeah.
What did it come out on? Like the Palm or something like that? Is that where it came
out
from?
I remember having it on a Palm M505, and so that dates it back to pre-2000, I believe.
Yeah. So
Documents2Go has been around forever.
Right. I think there's a free version that is read only, and there's like a $14.95 version that lets you edit, maybe create Word, Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, Microsoft PowerPoint type files for synchronous editing. So it's pretty good. I gave it a pretty good review a couple of years ago when I was writing about it, I think for Byte, one of those places. Now that's $14.95. Two other Office suites that I have bought or somehow gotten but not really tried are Polaris Office, for iOS. I think it might also be available for Android. And Smart Office 2. Polaris Office is $12.99. It might be on sale right now, actually, for $12.99. I forget what its regular price is. And Smart Office 2 is $9.99. It seems to have pretty decent reviews. Again, I haven't really tried it. I've got it installed. One of these days, I'll give it a whirl. But in any case, what we have is a lot of choices. And Microsoft has not produced a contender for Android or iPad. iOS, they do have something at mm-hmm. least. Where there's a contender is another story. And they are falling behind even on their own Windows 8 platform with a no Metro solution for their own Windows customers. And so I guess my question to you, because I kind of have my own answer, is Microsoft taking so long that Office is going to become less and less relevant? Maybe not irrelevant. I think, you know, you and I have to depend on it for our daily work. But for a lot of folks who don't need footnotes and table of contents and indexing and review capabilities, it might be overkill.
Well, I think if we trace back Office to I'm going to go way back in time to about 1995 when Office 95 came out. At that time, most of your home users were using they weren't really using Office. They were using Works, which was the small version of Office, if you will. One thing it could do pretty much everything Office could do, but it was one program. Or they were just using Write / WordPad, things like that built into the operating system. And then we went through a period of time in the 2000s where Office became bundled with a lot of different things. Microsoft really pushed it to home users. And home users, if they were using it in the office, they would take it and use it at home. But by and large, if a computer didn't come with it, I'd hear people complain about it not having Office, but I didn't really hear about a lot of people buying Office because it was still pretty expensive. And now we're getting to a point where I wonder if Office is slipping back into technical business application realm, where people who need it for its advanced features will be buying it, and the people who don't need it will make do with something that is cheap or free that's built into their devices. And I don't know if Microsoft doesn't just see that as a kind of an inevitability, and that's why they're not moving all that fast. Or if they're wanting to actively fight that, they're not doing a very good job. So that might be where we see Office going.
Yeah, I have to agree. You know, as someone who used to use Office components, like especially Word and Excel at home a lot, I find myself not doing that so much anymore. I have it at home. I have Office 2010 on my regular desktop and notebook. And as I mentioned earlier, I have Office 2013 components on my new tablets because they came bundled with it. So maybe, you know, Microsoft is pushing that again. But I rarely use it. If I need to do something, often Google Docs components are just fine. And by the way, for people wondering, Google Docs spreadsheet function does have pivot tables. It's not quite the same as Excel, but it's actually a little easier to use, I found, which is kind of interesting. So very useful. But, you know, the other thing is that Microsoft Office is one of the two big cash cows for Microsoft, other being the server line. Windows itself is not much of a cash cow as it used to be. So I wonder how long Microsoft can afford to ignore its, you know, number one or number two cash cow, Microsoft Office. Certainly, they could make a lot more money if they were selling it or providing subscription for it for Android and iOS.
That's what one would assume, although Microsoft logic does not always follow real-world logic. So for all I know, they've run the numbers and they don't want the consumer market. They just want the corporate market, and they just haven't come quite to grips with that. You know, you want to target consumers, you have to support consumers. And we know that there have been some growing pains over the last couple of years with companies like Google. When they introduced the Nexus line, all of a sudden they had consumers with problems wanting to talk to someone.
Yeah.
And they couldn't just say, I guess we need to have a support line or something like that. So Microsoft might know something we all don't, and they might be going, this is maybe a platform that's oversaturated. Let's step back and see if we can maybe emerge a victor in a few years. But that's giving them a lot of credit, and I worry that that's giving them more credit than's actually happening in their strategy meetings. So
yeah,
we shall see.
I have to agree with the latter. I think you're giving them too much credit. Because, you know, but you point out something interesting, because if true, I mean, if that is true, that they, you know, they're decided they're a business company, they are suffering from something like multiple personality disorder. Because on one hand, you know, they seem to be aiming Windows 8 or seem to have aimed initial Windows 8 at clearly at the consumer market, the people buying iPads and Android devices and that sort of thing. They have not, you know, they obviously were unwilling to put the money into porting Office 2013 in a timely fashion to their own Metro touch interface. And if you would think if anybody has the resources to port anything, it's Microsoft to their own platform. And yet they haven't. So you have to wonder, you know, where their head is. You know, if they're saying Windows 8 is a consumer device, Office isn't very important for it. Or alternatively, and I think the alternative is it is so hard to port correctly to touch, especially a huge, not legacy program, but legacy programs, multiple, you know, plural, that they, with thousands and thousands of very smart and capable programmers, are unable to do it, which is kind of a scary thought.
Microsoft has issues with touch. They have had issues with touch for a very long time. And there's some bad pun to be made about bad touches, but I think that that's going to continue to be a problem for them. They definitely also suffer from the psychologist in me is screaming out that multiple personality disorder is now properly known as dissociative identity disorder. They definitely suffer from that. The arm does not know what the head is doing, does not know what parts of the brain are doing, et cetera, at Microsoft.
Okay. So I think we agree that Microsoft is pretty late to this game. The game has been on since about April 2010 when that first iPad was introduced. We are coming up April 2014, pretty darn soon. Less than 2 months from now, it will be 4 years since they have not given a response to that market. 4 years is that's an eternity. We have seen, what, 5 iPads since April 4th, 2010?
Seen 5 iPads and 2 Surfaces, and 2 different versions of each of those 2 Surfaces,
right? And 2 Minis.
So, yes. So we should really be seeing we see hardware from Microsoft, but the software Metro was a step forward, and then they've kind of backed off because people don't like it that much. But that was the only touch capable platform they have.
Yeah. Well. Hey, you know, those of us who are handheld PC owners, I say that in the present tense because I still have functional handheld PCs. You know, we had a touch device that Microsoft Office for the handheld was weak. Yes, it was a subset, but it actually worked. I actually wrote a couple of book chapters on it, believe
that
it or not.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
I remember the longest thing I think I've written on a tablet of any kind with a keyboard attached has been like long form blog posts and things like that. But I don't think I've ever written a chapter of anything on them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have done that and I really enjoyed it. It was, you know, I couldn't afford the libretto and those kind of things back then to have a truly portable full Windows device, and Word was on there. I could, if I was very careful, you know, to use it as what my friend of mine calls a typing tank. In other words, I do no formatting. I literally just pound out the words on there and send it over to my PC. It was great for that. I got a lot written that way.
I was hoping you were just going to say, send it over to my copy editor. That would be great.
That would have been even better.
My stream of consciousness that I had last night, please make it into a book chapter. I would appreciate that.
Well, that did happen, but O'Reilly actually has a template that uses a very smart template in Microsoft Word that almost does auto-formatting, so it's pretty close.
Yeah, and that's the same thing. I was also thinking of that when you were mentioning that. This is something that our listeners who haven't written for big companies would really know of, but you do get these writing templates that are all in Word. Nobody ever gives you a Google Doc template or a Pages template something like that. And they want basically you to turn something in that looks very, very close to what it would look like on the page.
Right.
That is not something that I would be very comfortable. I'm doing tech review for a book right now, and I've written books. And I wouldn't be comfortable creating or reviewing those things in anything other than Word on a full-screened laptop. So,
yeah, and we should talk about it in another podcast because I have some. I think I've mentioned some interesting things about using Windows 8 on an 8-inch Venue Pro, which I think is a great piece of hardware. I really enjoy using it, but Windows 8 is a challenge on anything less than a screen that's 10 inches big, and even then. It really wants a 15-inch screen, maybe 13 inches at best. Anyway, this week I thought I'd try something different. Instead of an app of the week pick, I have an anti-app pick.
So a don't pick.
Yeah, I guess so. And I use the word anti because, we have celebrities and other things in the universe have fans, right? People that are very pro something, pro celebrity, pro product, whatever. One of the things I've learned the last couple of years in South Korea, the pop culture, there's something called an anti-fan, anti-fan. And so there are people against certain celebrities and those sort of things. And so I have a pick of a week of a program I used to be very fond of, and I'm now really annoyed at, and that is Waze, W-A-Z-E, which is which was an excellent navigational tool. I think it's actually still a pretty good navigational tool. And used to give really useful traffic information. But let me tell you something. In the last, since Google bought them, I don't know what's going on. And Google does own Waze now. It used to be a standalone
company. I'm getting a sense of deja vu. It seems like a lot of things people tell me start going south when I hear, since X bought them.
Yeah.
And more often than not, it's Google. But go ahead.
Well, you know, in my area, my part of the world in Honolulu, I used to get up in the morning, turn on Waze, not because I didn't know where I was going. I know how to get to my office. But I wanted to know That's about good. The traffic situation. You know, how much is there? Where is it? Should I route around it? And Waze used to do a pretty credible job. There used to be maybe about 2 to 350 people that were using Waze. You know, when you turn it on, it tells you how many people around you are using it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's down to less than 60 or 50 often. There is no credible traffic condition information anymore. I don't even bother looking at it. And something I just discovered today, I was rushing from my mom's home to an appointment, and I wasn't sure what the traffic was like, so I turned on Waze for the first time in a very long time to just in the hopes it would give me some kind of traffic density information. And the first thing it did was turn off the audio to my podcast. I was listening to Windows Weekly, actually. And I tried everything. I tried, you know, turning one on and the other. And every time I turned Waze on or brought Waze to the foreground, I should say, not turn it on, it would cut off my podcast audio. It did not used to do that, but now it does. And so Waze gets my anti-app pick of the week of something that used to be one of my favorites and now I am against and actively campaigning against. Google, I hope you fix this thing.
Yeah, the audio hijack, and I don't know, I haven't used Waze. I think I installed it once, but I never really bothered using it that much. Does it have any useful information it has to send through audio? Does it need to hijack your audio for any purpose?
Oh, actually, it's got a lot of useful information. So, for example, because it's a crowdsourced app, if it knows about a pothole that is, you know, you're coming up on, it will tell you pothole in 500 yards, 400 yards, 300 yards, or it'll tell you accident ahead. Or it'll tell you police ahead, or you know something, right? There's something on the road ahead. So it actually gives quite useful information via audio, so you don't have to take your eyes off the road.
I'm a bit hung up on the pothole. As someone who grew up in northern Ohio, every road I was on, there was a pothole in 100 feet. So that would be an extremely annoying thing that okay, so at least it has some purpose. It is sometimes I find developers will hijack the audio. They'll push everything over to themselves for really no purpose other than just they didn't want to figure out a way to route the audio nicely. So maybe it has a purpose of that, but it should do what a lot of GPS software does and allow you to select a track or select something from your audio library to listen to while you're listening to Waze, and then it could route things and lower your volume and give you an alert and then raise your volume back up.
Right. And I should say that previous versions of Waze, when I was using it regularly, did that. It would let you, actually, you didn't even have to manually say, I want to use mm-hmm. another audio track. It would simply allow the audio to stream. Like you, for me, it's usually either a podcast or an Audible audiobook. And then when it needs to interrupt saying, hey, there's an accident ahead or slow traffic ahead or whatever, it would pop up, duck my volume of whatever I was listening to, which is kind of a problem if you're listening to audiobook. But in any case, it did the appropriate thing, and then it would return me to my audio stream. So it used to work correctly, which is why it's especially annoying now that it just works completely incorrectly. Waze from Google.
I feel your pain.
Waze from Google, yeah.
We shall give an anti-review to Waze.
Anti-review. It's my anti-app pick of the week. On the other hand,
so that would be your app throwaway of the week.
Yeah, that's, you know, fix it and let me know and I'll try it again someday. The other one is would have been, had I had an anti-app pick of the week a while back, would have been Blaster, BLASTR for Android from the Sci-Fi Channel. So for those who don't know, Blaster, BLASTR, is a mostly science fiction movie and TV show app that tells you what's new in science fiction, sci-fi type TV shows and movies. Not necessarily from the Sci-Fi Channel, but it is produced, the app itself is from the Sci-Fi mm-hmm. Channel. You know, as a sci-fi freak, or actually a science fiction freak, sci-fi, science fiction fans don't like to call it sci-fi.
Yes.
Blaster has a lot of good information. It's a lot of good, you know, fun news to read if you're a fan of the genre. And it worked great on iOS. Now I'm not so sure I would say that. But it was completely broken on Android. I mean, you couldn't even read a single article using the Android app. And so I used to just read the web version of Blaster.com. It just got updated this week, and it actually seems to work now. So if you use Android and you like reading the information in Blaster, I would recommend at least taking another look at the Android app, see if it works for you. It works for me now, so I'm pretty happy with that.
Well, that is a very good thing to know. I'm also a science fiction fan, and I'm a little bit on the obsessive side, which most science fiction fans are. So I always tell people, for example, one thing I know you're into that I haven't gotten into yet is Doctor Who. And the reason I haven't is because I know that once I do, it will take up at least 3 or 4 years of my life.
Yeah.
But that being said, when I do watch an episode of something, with the exception of Star Trek The Next Generation, which I know way too well, I tend to then immediately, you know, go read every wiki article I can find, every behind-the-scenes trivia, every this and every that. So these apps that give that to me are like brain candy. I will just binge on them.
Yeah, and not to get too much into a rat hole, but as someone who started with Doctor Who with the fourth Doctor, we are coming up on the 12th in the next season. you got a lot of catching up to do if you forget about it. But it's well worth it, I think.
One should be very careful about what they choose to obsess over. That is something I learned at an early age when I was obsessing over Star Trek The Next Generation.
Okay. So I know you've got a couple of app picks or picks for yourself. What do you got, John?
Well, this is actually one app, and it's one that I looked for and found yesterday, and it plays very well into our office discussion. So I mentioned the iWork suite, and I've been using Keynote for all of my presenting for the last couple of years, just because I like the way it looks over PowerPoint. I've been using Numbers for things like my attendance tracking and Pages when I have to. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really had anything for mobile database usage. And I use Evernote for an awful lot of things.
Me too.
And Evernote is great for a lot of things. The problem is, if you have structured data that you want to store, Evernote is a bit cloudy in that. It's cloudy in sync, and it's also cloudy in data storage.
Yeah.
So, for example, around here, I don't have a lot of storage space, so I have these big Sterilite bins that have all of my spare gadgets and cables and all of that. And I have an inventory, and I keep it in Evernote. The problem is I move things around, or things get pushed here and there, and I forget to update the note in Evernote, and I just have to redo the whole thing every so often because it's just a useless list. So I was looking for some app that would let me build a database on my Mac desktop and would let me access that same database through my iOS devices, my iPad and my iPhone. This is something that sounds pretty easy, and there are a few solutions out there, but none of them, the big name ones that I was able to find, could do the seamless iCloud sync and do other things I wanted them to do. So there was Bento from FileMaker, and then FileMaker killed Bento about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
FileMaker itself, even if you buy the full version of it, doesn't do seamless iCloud syncing or anything like that, so you're kind of at a loss. I happened upon this program called TapForms, TapForms. And if you go to tapforms.com, you can see a whole bunch of info on the products. It's a small developer out of Canada, out of Calgary, who has developed this piece of software that's actually a very nice, versatile database software app. And it's built around this idea that you have various forms. So if you used Access in the past and you built front-end forms for your tables, it's the same sort of idea. You can link forms to other forms and have, you know, child and parent databases and tables and those sorts of things. The nice thing about it is it does have iCloud sync, and it will let you do things like barcode scanning. So if you want a database of all your books or a database of anything that already has a barcode, you can use barcode input on your iOS devices. The only downside is that it is a bit expensive. You have to buy all three pieces separately. So the Mac OS version, the iPad HD version, and the iPhone version. The macOS version goes for $29.99. The iPad version is $8.99, and the iPhone version is another $8.99. So if you're willing to shell out a little under $50, you can have a very nice complete syncing solution. And honestly, by software pricing standards of, I guess, 1998, I would have thought that was a great price. Mm-hmm. It's only in these last few years that I've gotten very ruined by things that do a lot for a very small amount of money. So I think it's a fair price. It's just more than what we're used to. And it's a very nice piece of software with an engaged developer who hangs out in the forums. And I found a little bit of a bug last night. I emailed him. He emailed me back within a couple of hours with some thoughts on it. So I've been very happy in the last 24 hours that I've been playing with this software.
Nice. And you're right. You know, we've become very spoiled with 99 cent or freemium apps. I remember paying, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 bucks for HandyBase. You know, on the Pocket PC 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more than 10 years ago, 15 years ago, something like that, and thought it was a great deal because it was a heck of a lot cheaper than buying, you know, Oracle.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Or even FileMaker. Isn't FileMaker about $100 or $300 or something like that?
Oh, FileMaker now, like top of the line, FileMaker is $500. It's, and honestly, $47.97 if you buy all three parts is a little bit more than a year of Evernote Premium. And this isn't just a year. So you get this software and it'll work for a conceivable future. So yeah. I think sometimes we have to take a step back and go, yeah, that hurts a little more than I'm used to it hurting these days. But for a small developer, it's worth it to have them supported and also to encourage their work.
Especially for something that has a cloud sync feature, which, you know, many of us would have killed for not that long ago.
And it also, I should mention, there's syncing capabilities for Dropbox. Import and export has some very nice capabilities. Encryption, all of these nice things. A bunch of different field formats, something like 20 different types of fields you can have, from text to date and time and date time and barcode scanning on the mobile and all of this stuff. Photos as well. So in my little inventory now, I have a photo of everything. So if my description isn't good enough, I know exactly what I was talking about.
Oh, good. And, you know, as we get older, our memory starts to fade. So it is good to have a photo of things every now and then. But, you know,
well, and it's also useful. It strikes me that there are times when, you know, I might be traveling or I might be at my office and need to, you know, have, you know, ask my wife, oh, on the way up to my office for lunch, can you grab something? And she doesn't know what a lot of these things look like. Mm-hmm. So if I could just show her a photo and say, hey, it's this thing and it's in this box, that helps quite a bit.
That's actually a very good point. And, you know, getting back to the price, it is a little bit more expensive. And again, I haven't tried it, so I don't know if I'd like it. But the office type apps tend to be a little bit more expensive. I think I mentioned Polaris Office is $12.99. Smart Office is $9.99, and Documents to Go is $14.95. The now free but formerly for fee, iWorks components for iOS used to be $10 or $20 each. So, they tend to be a little bit more than 99 cent or freemium that we're used to for games and you know, weather apps and a few other things that are ad supported. So, yeah, it's good. As a software developer myself, I don't do mobile apps, but I'd like to keep people employed. You know, can have their kids, you know, fed and clothed and all that kind of stuff. So good for them if they can make some money off this, and it sounds like a good app.
Yep. I've been very happy. Now, hopefully this won't become an anti-app pick of the week in the future. I doubt it, but, you know, hopefully Google won't buy them. I know the developer might disagree with me. But, you know, I don't want to hear it's gone downhill ever since Google bought
it. I know. Yeah, and for folks out there, don't get me started on Google Voice, which is still one of my favorite services. But, hey, Google, would you do something with it? I mean, aside from, you know, moving it into Hangouts, which is driving me a little bonky.
I know. I use Voice all the time. It's the one number I give out. It's the number on my website. Me too. It's a great product that I'm hoping doesn't disappear. And I would love, at this point, I'm just happy if it doesn't disappear. Yes. I would love if it had some feature upgrades and maybe a better app on iOS and a better app on Android. But it's a nice, nice service.
Yeah, sounds like we should have a rant on Voice and our plea to Google to please keep it alive. unlike some other things that they have killed over the years, the Google Graveyard. We don't want to see it in the Google Graveyard because that would be a very, very sad day for a lot of us.
It would.
In any case, have you anything else to add, John?
It is the day, we're recording this the day after Valentine's Day, yep. So I hope everyone had a nice geeky Valentine's Day, and you know that their computers are showing them love. I hope no one had a computer crash or die on Valentine's Day. That's being betrayed by a very close confidant that we all have, so... I'm hoping everyone's Valentine. And, you know, if you have carbon-based life forms that you also love on Valentine's Day, I hope that went well for you.
Yeah, more power to you if you do. And that includes pets. Pets and people count. Yes. Pets and people count. Okay. All right. So this has been, let's see, Mobile Views Podcast number 75. Taro Gasaward, my good friend John Westfall. We will talk to you next time, and we will rant and rave about something else.